CBD Revolution. The world is discovering CBD and its potential for numerous health benefits. Hemp Fusion Wellness is the premier company looking at CBD with a whole food perspective. For the highest quality CBD oils and products for stress, sleep, energy, and topicals, it's Hemp Fusion. This CBD Revolution highlight has been brought to you by Hemp Fusion Wellness, U.S. trading symbol CBDHF, and in Canada, CBD.U. Web address, hempfusion.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Robert Kroll, Bob Kroll, Senior Affiliated Scholar at Mercatus Center, Emeritus Professor of Economics at California State University, Northridge, looking at immigration, the big picture. What is to be gained with immigration? What is to be lost with immigration? And we begin with some important definitions I learned from Robert, from his research into the research of these last 60 years. It's important to draw a distinction between immigrants who are arriving as, let's go to the mid-20th century, 1960, and immigrants arriving today. Professor, a very good evening to you. As I understand it, the mix of immigrants without a high school education and immigrants with a bachelor's degree or more have changed dramatically over these last 60 years. How so? Good evening.
Yeah, I took a look at some of the data, and it's fairly significant. So when we think about the distribution of education and skills of immigrant workers, it's a bit of a U-shape. We have a big chunk of unskilled immigrants and a big percentage of high-skilled. If we look at immigration over the last roughly 60 years, a little more than 26% of the immigrants had less than 12 years of education, less than a high school degree, and almost 33% had a bachelor's degree of some sort or more. If we look at the last 5 years, to try to get in contrast the two, we can see that the percentage with 12 years or less of education has fallen to about, 18.6%, whereas the percentage of immigrants with a bachelor's degree or more is almost 48%. And I think what's interesting is when you compare that to the similar education categories of Native Americans living in this country, of course, there are far fewer high school dropouts, only 6.7% high school dropouts, but 36.3% bachelor degrees or more. So we're bringing what the people who are immigrating, a very large percentage of them are highly skilled individuals. And I think that's really important when we think about immigration and the impact this immigration will have on the U.S. economy.
I tell the story when I was reading your paper. I tell the story that a good colleague of mine, an extremely well-educated young man with a family, has been told that he must wait at least 1 year for an H-1B visa to join us here in the United States. Though he has been here on and off over the years as a correspondent for distinguished publications, that doesn't matter. He's re-entering the country. Perhaps it's the pandemic. Perhaps it's the immigration story in Washington that is now a tangle of partisanship. But in any event, a full year for an extremely well-educated teacher, scholar, and researcher to enter the United States tells me that the U.S. does not have a rational policy. But I don't want to ask you to endorse that. I just learn from you that this is part of the larger story. Now, in addition to that, your research into the researchers breaks down immigration not only for the H-1B visas, but also how we measure the impact of immigration. There are wages and there are opportunities. But the puzzle, why is it important to do this geographically, city, state, and locality? How does that change the mix, Professor?
The advantage of looking at, let's just think of across major cities in the U.S. or any country, is that you now have multiple labor markets that you're looking at. And from a statistical point of view, you know, more data is better. You're more likely to get more precise, more accurate results, rather than just looking at, when you look at the aggregate for any country in the U.S., you know, you're still looking at one market. You may have a good amount of data, but it's just one market. And so that's the advantage. The disadvantage of looking at immigration, the impact of immigration at the city level, the demographic, the disadvantage is that there could be spillover effects. That is to say, if a large number of immigrants enter a particular city, you may get natives moving out of that city to some other city, and so that the effect of immigration is being spread out over multiple markets. It turns out that that's not a big problem. It does not appear to be the case that you see natives moving to other cities. What you tend to see over time is Native American workers changing the types of jobs they choose and look for. They'll specialize in jobs that better fit their skill mix. And the most obvious point would be language. You know, certain jobs are far more language intensive than others. And certainly the native worker would have an advantage in those types of jobs, management, sales, that kind of thing, or you can even think about the legal profession. You're trying to expand, fundamentally you're trying to expand the number of markets to try to analyze.
Yes, I see. That is one of the positives of immigration, that it creates opportunities. You also mentioned a positive is that immigrants bring a different skill set. Now, the puzzle here, Professor, is that when we think about immigration today here in the 21st century, we concentrate on just a small slice, the least skilled, the least educated, and the most, what you'd have to say, challenged, historically challenged, coming from nations where they've had poor health care, poor education, and really have no resources to bring to the U.S. Oftentimes, they're regarded as coming here selfishly. You know, economic migrants, I think, is the polite way to put it. However, I'm wondering if that same group doesn't contribute to some of these positives, such as other skill sets. I tell the story of relatives of mine, my mother's family. They came from the Middle East, actually from Iran, what was then Persia. Boy, did they know how to grow almonds and pistachios. And, of course, they went right to California. And those are the pistachio and almond fields that prosper worldwide, because that was a skill. Maybe it was here, but not in great number. So is that true of immigration today here in the 21st century, that people coming from cultures that are discontinuous with ours bring skill sets we do not have or don't have enough of?
I mean, that's very true. And even when you think about a unskilled immigrant, someone with minimal amounts of education, you could still argue that they are complementary to native workers. For example, when you think about it, you can hire these individuals to do yard work, clean your house, daycare centers, and that frees up the time of the native, higher skilled native worker to be more productive, essentially. Either they could work more hours, get more training themselves, or, relax a little bit, which may also improve their productivity. And that may be especially beneficial for women in terms of that having the access to those services that these less skilled immigrants bring.
You also make a distinction between immigration over a longer period of time and a surge of workers. What's the distinction, yeah, Professor?
Well, a surge of workers, you have some event that allows a large number of individuals to immigrate from one country to the other. And the most famous one is in the late 1980s, the Mariel Boatlift, where for a short period of time, the Cuban government allowed individual Cubans to immigrate to the U.S. And so we had this large surge of immigrants. And since immigrants tend to settle in cities and areas where there are other immigrants like them, at least as their first step, there was work done looking at Miami, since there's a fairly significant Cuban population there. And, a number of papers went back and forth on that, but generally, we have not seen particularly adverse effects of the labor markets, at least in Miami.
You make a distinction also between first and second generation immigrants. What can we, before we plunge into the critical matter of wages and opportunities and skill sets? What does the first and second generation look like?
Well, they're starting to assimilate, okay? And so they are becoming, in some sense, culturally more like natives in some sense. And so that the impact may be different on them than other workers in the economy. So it's an assimilation process.
And you also, you generalize, I believe, that it's 10 years for assimilation, from the arrival to assimilation?
There was one paper. That was the time frame that their estimates indicated. Again, you want any one estimate that you see out there in a paper, you always want to be careful and not take it as literally, it's 10 years and they're completely assimilated. Obviously, different cultures coming here may take either longer or less time to assimilate. So that's thinking of it as a rough average, I guess.
I'm speaking to Professor Robert Kroll, Bob Kroll, Emeritus Professor of Economics at California State University in Northridge. He's now a senior affiliated scholar at Mercatus Center, George Mason University. He's compiled studies of immigrants and natives over these last 60 years. And when we come back, the payoff, wages, employment rate, and perception. That is everything in politics. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.